Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
In this episode, we're discussing the role of the modern COO. Join us as we sit down with leaders from Gitbook, Doublefin, and formerly CB Insights to discuss the nuances of the COO role and its instrumental impact on any fast-growing company.
So really quickly, my background previously was running marketing and growth for different organizations, but full-time as a consultant, and then built out an executive recruiting firm. And now we're a team of 17 worldwide, and I'm normally based in New York.
Hi, so I'm Sarah. I am, for almost the past year, CEO at Gitbook. Previously, I was the CEO at Framer, and I am based in Amsterdam.
Hi, everybody. I'm the COO at Doublefin. My name's Ha. I came from a pretty diverse background in operations, finance, people ops, and business development across mostly large companies. Now building HR tech with a small, nimble team. Glad to be here with you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Fabio. I used to be the COO for CB Insights. Before that, I was the executive vice president of strategy, operations, marketing, global sales at Gympass. And I had a background in finance before that. Super excited for this conversation with all of you today.
Awesome. Excited for this. So when all of you RSVP'd, you were asked to put in a question that you wanted to dig in with the panelists. We took the most interesting of the questions, filtered it down, and have them here. So this is something I've always been curious about. And I've heard a few different viewpoints on it, but would love to hear from all of you. Describing the role of a COO and like, how does it differ from a CEO? Is it just a different title, or usually is the personalities different? Are the responsibilities sort of spread out in a very specific way, or does it really bleed in quite heavily? I'd love to know kind of what all of you have learned about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I get this one a lot. It makes sense that this came up. Yeah, I guess one way I describe it, and I reference this article a lot, but there's a really old kind of Harvard Business Review article that says the 7 types of COOs. And I think it's super relevant with most people that I've talked to. They fit in one or all almost of these categories. And it's everything from kind of executing to partnering with the CEO to mentoring to the heir. So kind of following behind the next CEO, the change agent, and yeah, bringing in a lot of different change. So currently I kind of view it as right now, I would say I'm 6 out of the 7. But partnering closely with the CEO, and I think they're really responsible for kind of direction and vision. And CEO, I really describe as the one that makes it all happen. So figuring out when you see it done, making sure the right pieces of the puzzle are moving, and yeah, making that vision come to life.
Makes a lot of sense. Okay, so it's split between sort of like vision and getting stuff out the door, getting it done.
Yeah, I would say I'm the realist when it comes to conversations. Like, okay, let's bring this back to reality. That's also a big role I say. I play pretty often.
Okay. Optimist and realist. Okay. That makes a lot of sense as well.
Yeah. I think it's kind of interesting. I find it a little bit challenging for folks to kind of bucket CEOs or COOs. Those are just kind of titles. I think you have CEOs that are just big time dreamers, visionaries, coupled with COOs that are highly operational, execution focused, you know, come from strong project program management backgrounds. But from what I've seen, mostly it's just making sure that there's a great complementary fit, right? Oftentimes when I've encountered CEOs, smaller companies, larger companies, they each have their own style, and that's really not defined by the title itself. And right now my role is predominantly go-to-market activities, partnerships, business development, but I've also done the role where I'm just purely, okay, take all those dreams and wishes and turn them into something pragmatic. And okay, who's doing what by what time? And then keeping track of things, right? So it just depends on the situation and the company and kind of the personality fits, I think.
Okay, that's interesting. So it's almost coming into a company and evaluating where your partners are kind of strong and where they maybe need a little bit more help, and then filling in those gaps versus it just being sort of a rigid thing.
I think so. Depending on industries, right? I mean, certain industries, yeah, there's very clear guidelines for what experience a CEO has to have. But seeing that, you know, this, all of us come from a bit of the tech industry, it could be a very fuzzy path there, and the role itself could be very wide ranging.
Yeah. Do you have any examples of sort of you don't have to say the roles or who your partners were in the organization, but some areas where you walked into a company and said, oh, here's specific gaps that I've noticed based on the people who are running the company and mm-hmm. the way that they have approached things. Like, are there certain examples of like gaps you sort of recognize where it's like, okay, here's where now I know that I've done a quick analysis where I need to go in and fill in?
Yeah, actually, maybe we'll talk about this later, but in most of the roles where I've had either a chief of staff type role or a CEO type role, I mean, it's that conversation upfront of, okay, let's assess who's doing what activities for this organization and where you have gaps, right? And do my experiences actually fit those gaps? In a prior life at Walmart, I was in an engineering organization with product teams, technical marketers, and what they actually needed was someone to help run the deals. So contract negotiations and that type of role that you wouldn't have been able to tell just from a job title. So it really does depend.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And then Fabio, I don't know if there's anything you've learned about like how the COO and the CEO role sort of differs or.
Absolutely. And I love this conversation and I fully agree with the inputs from Sarah and how in that particular regard. That role also depends on the maturity of the company and what the company needs at a certain point in time. Sometimes you come as a COO with the responsibility of trying to stabilize something. And sometimes you come as a COO with the role of trying to take the company to the next level, which means disrupt something, right? In my view, one important piece of the COO role, even though the scope of responsibilities always vary from company to company, is that usually there is a responsibility of being someone in charge or with a high level of influence on the operational cadence of a company. Mm-hmm. By that, I mean just the setting the systems or setting the combination of people, processes, and product to actually get something done or to actually prioritize something to get done, which also means saying no to a lot of things, right? So when I think about the relationship between the COO and the CEO, a lot of times in my experience, what I saw is that the CEO comes with all these possibilities and ideas and ways to move forward. And there is a role of the CEO of helping to prioritize and making the trade-offs and executing on those potential initiatives and potential ways to enable growth or scale for the company.
That later part of your answer sounds very similar to what Sarah was saying as well. And to put it in like a more extreme term, sometimes it might be babysitting someone who is sort of thinking really big, but doesn't really think about the nuts and bolts of how to get there and being a bit more of that voice in the room. So that makes a lot of sense. And I guess you bring up a really good point that, and this is probably true of almost any executive, but the CEO in particular, whether you're coming into an opportunity where something is just growing and your job is to keep on growing it or going in and fixing it. And I don't know if one is more fun than the other. I'd have to imagine the going into a growing organization is more fun than going and sort of doing a transformation on something that may not have been going in the right direction. But yeah, I'd imagine that's more fun for all of you. But I'd imagine some people are also specialists to coming in and making rapid changes and saying, this is not working. We need to pull this out. This is not working. We need to pull this out. But if you have to go in and do that, or do you feel like there's a certain amount of lead time you need to wait before kind of going in and making those rapid changes? Just to get comfort with everyone in the organization, possibly the board of a company, et cetera, or no, when you know something needs to be changed, you just need to really jump at it as quickly as possible.
Yeah. In my view, that depends on the context, right? And depends on the situation. Sometimes it's something that is more like a firefighting mode. And then there is something really kind of like, you just need to put out a fire. A lot of times you need to actually understand what are the opportunities and even coming up with the idea or coming up with the assessment that maybe there's something that needs to be changed from a more fundamental way, right? But in any case, I do believe that gathering the context when you're going to a new situation is absolutely fundamental. You need a little bit of time for that. Obviously, if you can leverage some of the knowledge that already exists, like from the board, from the CEO, they can point you maybe in the right direction. But I think part of the responsibility of the CEO is very quickly start to have a independent point of view of the situation, what you do about it. And that is really important. That independence is really important in terms of sometimes even questioning what is the status quo in terms of decision making or what appears to be more important at a point in time.
That makes a lot of sense. And fairly early in my career, I went to independent consulting and I was brought in to do fixes at certain companies at certain times. And I would say one of the areas I was not strong at was slowly easing into the fixes instead of just going in and quickly being like, this is broken, fix it, change people out and, you know, make extremely rapid changes. So I think now that I'm a little further along in my career, I'd be able to ease into that a little bit more, into those conversations a little bit more smoothly. And I'd imagine that's probably a better way to go than just going in and ripping everything apart. So, I mean, a CEO is a pretty exciting career path for a lot of people. And it's oftentimes considered the kind of like pinnacle for a non-technical, non-sounding CEO to sort of achieve, particularly people who are generalists or who are very analytical or who are incredibly organized and structured, but it's not an easy path to get there. So as folks are attempting to work their way up to those levels, which all of you have, neither of you just started a company and gave yourself a title. Each of you worked your way up to sort of becoming a COO. So I don't know if there's any tips or tricks or thoughts on folks who are ambitious and want to grow their career, or are maybe one step away and don't know how to get there. Either way, just things that you've learned along your paths that have sort of gotten you to where you are today.
I can jump in. And yeah, I mean, I think one thing that's really helped me is finding a mentor or someone senior in the company that can help you train the muscle of going on a wider lens and actually understanding the inner workings of a company. Because I think that's, I mean, most people are focused on a certain domain or they're really focused on a certain area of the company. So it really takes a lot for them to go fully big picture and also see the different parts of the engine and how they move and how they work together. So I think that's a really big muscle that you can start training at any point that will help you kind of grow and figure out, okay, this is how things are working. This is how we define impact. This is where we can focus on. Because I think that's really important in this role, no matter which setup you are in. It's, yeah, kind of critical.
Makes sense. Don't just do a role, do something that actually is relevant for the business and helps the organization grow in the way that they want to grow, or fixing something that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, because that's why I think the role is so different from company to company and why it can evolve over time, because it has to be a bit flexible, right? And it needs to mold into the leadership team that's there, the type of CEO that you have. So having that big picture view allows you to do that and know, okay, this is worth it, this is not.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think nobody wants to hire a COO and then have that person, you know, a few weeks in say, well, no, that's not my job. I don't do that. It's not on the job description here. You know, that's someone who's probably not up for that job at that current point in their career.
Definitely.
You brought up a good point about mentorship, and a little bit further than mentorship, I think, is just meeting as many people as possible. You know, you can have official mentors who you can lean on, who, you know, can come to you as much as possible. But if your goal is to become a COO, you should meet as many people who hold that role as possible and talk to them and understand what their unique paths are. I know when I always thought I wanted to be an executive early on in my career, I met people who were senior executives at larger companies, and I talked to them. I was like, I don't really align with them. I wasn't super excited about, you know, the things they were saying. Then when I met people who started their own companies or even started agencies, I was like, oh wow, I really kind of feel a lot more similar to these folks who just kind of are building agencies in thin air, kind of don't really know what they're doing, but figure it out as they go. There was something kind of exciting about that. And I think meeting as many people as possible is kind of the biggest trick to moving on in your career, because you're going to know when you speak to them, okay, this is someone I can see myself aspiring to become like. So yeah, and I think that's true of almost any function. Meeting everybody as much as possible is just such a trick to be able to move ahead and for them to be able to refer you into great opportunities and ones that other folks can't necessarily hear about.
In my particular experience, getting some exposure to different sides of the organization, different types of functions, I think it's helpful in terms of having some laterality in terms of the career exploration. That also includes, in my view, if possible, of course, to get involved or be responsible for some projects that are cross-functional in nature, in which you might need to, you know, like persuade people to do things and they're not reporting to you or your peers or even, you know, like a bull. You on the hierarchy of the company or even projects in which you need to, you know, quote unquote, like, you know, bring order to chaos, systematizing something, you know, like creating a new cadence. for something, I think that is a great way to just train the skills that you need to have when you are a COO. But it's also good just to see if you like it. You know, like a lot of people love this kind of work. A lot of people just hate it. And there's nothing wrong with it. It's just knowing if that is something that, you know, like is going to be a good fit for you.
I completely second that. I think the path to COO is just so broad that really it's, I think maybe one quality is you for sure know that you don't want to do one single function for the rest of your life. And you've got that curiosity and you've got that kind of desire to work cross-functionally with other people to accomplish a goal is, I mean, ultimately, I think for COOs/CEOs that are great partners, you kind of don't look at it as just one functional responsibility. You're kind of trying to weave together everybody that's necessary to accomplish a particular objective.
Makes a lot of sense. A lot of people are drawn to the title and the potential compensation that comes with the title, but are they really built for that role? They really, you know, do they really want to do that role? Or is it when we're running C-level searches, we get a lot of people who are drawn to titles, not necessarily the jobs themselves. And it's not a small job to keep entire companies sort of operations and keep the trains running on time for every little thing across every single part of the organization. So I think that's a really great point. Like, do you even think that you would enjoy the job of a COO at a company? And going back to what I mentioned about my earlier learnings, I think I learned I would not enjoy being a functional executive earlier on. And so it's a really great point. Do you even enjoy the work? And again, I think meeting as many people as possible and learning about what they do on a day-to-day basis will help you figure out whether you actually enjoy that, which from our side, when we talk to candidates, I just don't think they do enough of that, meeting enough people in their own peer groups. Cool. Let's jump to the next one. Yeah, this is one that I'm very curious about as personally someone who does not consider himself a good people manager. If you're managing a very large team, how do you approach that? Especially since probably as an organization grows, the people in those teams are playing very different functions. Yeah. What helps you with that? What have you learned that does well?
I'm happy to jump in on this one. So I think the first thing that I always end up having to do is just breaking down the entire business model, right? Whether you're a COO or not, just understanding exactly what the moving parts are for the business, you know, and how does it make money? How does, you know, what are the inputs in the business before you even get to the people? And once you're able to break that down, then you got to communicate that, right? So that the teams that you're aligning with, you're working, making sure everybody is on the same page and have kind of a similar understanding. I think for the COO role, it's just heavily alignment, and folks should understand kind of what their, you know, the role that they play in particular to drive the company forward. That's helped a lot. And this might be ancient, but for communications, I just use Barbara Minto's pyramid principle. Very specific, but it's just been incredibly useful. It's not a complex framework. It's just a playbook for how do you convey problems, opportunities, and break it down into very logical, you know, rationale and steps, so that when you deliver it, folks understand the context, the goals in a very clear way. I think communications for a COO is absolutely important.
What was the name of it again? Was Barbara something?
Barbara Minto, Pyramid Principle.
Okay, cool. Thanks for repeating that. Yeah. Any other thoughts on kind of managing large cross-functional teams that all have their own, you know, disparate responsibilities, metrics, and at times probably clash because certain goals are going to not align with each other as easily as they hopefully should.
Yeah, there are two things that I'd like to share more on the people side, right? Less on the design side, more on the people side. One is spending time with any part of the talent management cycle pays off, meaning that spending extra time in terms of hiring the right people, in assessing people, not only during the performance, you know, like the performance evaluation cycle, but all the time, and having the conversations about what is working, not working, in my experience, always pays off. And then I do believe that a lot of times it's easy to deprioritize that. If we think about that matrix of urgent things versus the important things, everything related to talent management, in my view, those things are usually the most important ones. And then when they become urgent, it's usually too late. So actually setting the right team and setting that team for success is particularly important, especially when you're getting to a point in which you are managing managers, because then it's not about their excellence in terms of delivering results, but how they are creating the leverage through their teams and actually creating that pull from their team to deliver more results. And the second thing is just making sure that the communication among that team is working really well. Every time there's an element that I am confused about, that confusion is going to multiply, you know, down the line. It's just going to, the entropy is going to become bigger and bigger. So there is a responsibility of being very precise and very specific, even in when there is ambiguity, in terms of being very clear about what is going on, what we're doing about it, and why we're doing this, and how we're going to do this.
That makes sense. Thanks for that. So when you're interviewing people to be managers or directors of other people, you kind of mentioned maybe if it's like an IC, you're looking for excellence within that particular, you know, narrow area. But are you looking for something different when you're hiring, you know, people managers to report into? And if so, what are you sort of looking for when interviewing them or reviewing a resume or whatnot?
You know, like if I'm hiring someone to be the role of a manager, I'd have to try to look for marks of a good manager, regardless of the functional expertise. Right. And then a lot of it, I think, is related to how they've been able to historically develop their teams and hire good people and almost like, you know, getting people to evolve even maybe at a faster pace than them. And also people who take full personal accountability for the successes and failures of their team. I think that's particularly important as well.
Okay. Interesting. So when interviewing them, you're probably asking more management oriented questions like, how do you manage? What will your team say about you? What frameworks do you use? What metrics are you using for success? Things like that, more so than, hey, how talented are you at this particular function that you've grown right. up in?
There's a blend, right? I obviously want to see the functional expertise, but I think those usually come across more clearly when you see somebody's background and where the person been before and the achievements and all those things. But exploring, you know, like the team management aspects is really important. One thing that I'm a big fan of is doing reference checks with people who are reports of the people that I'm trying to hire. I'm a big fan. I think I get a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, definitely. And it might not even be a yes, should we hire this person or no, should we not? It's just understanding how best to manage that person based off of previous experiences. So that definitely makes sense. If you were kind of at the company level thinking about hiring someone like yourselves, you know, as you mentioned earlier, to keep the trains running, make sure to execute, rein in a CEO if some of their ideas are not as executable or put in the nuts and bolts, what would you look for either in background, in personality, in where people spike, you know, any of those that you think is really important to look for founders or CEOs looking to bring on someone who's, you know, more or less, you know, their number two?
Yeah, I think this one is a good question. So the personality one for me, I think, depends. Again, every setup, every team, you need to look for what complements you, what either brings you back to reality or what pushes you forward, what makes you more organized or not. So I think that can really vary. But for me, two kind of bigger things is kind of ability to prioritize. So that is key. Can they actually understand like the full scope and know where to spend their time? Because again, it's so cross-functional and it's really across the entire business. And there's only so many hours in a day. You can't possibly move everything forward at all times. So a strong ability to prioritize is a big one, and being able to kind of hold an independent view where they can constantly challenge the best path forward is really key. And then, yeah, I think the other one is about driving execution, but it's really on a strong ability to understand what motivates other leaders in the company and other people, and being able to kind of pull their strengths together and how to best leverage those.
That last one's a really good point. Like, can you not just hire great people, but once you got them in the door, how do you get them excited to keep on going on a weekly and monthly basis? Especially if you're a startup, when there's just so much uncertainty. So that's actually a really good question. Every company should be asking that CTO, how do you get people to actually get excited about their job day in, day out?
Yeah. And they're quite different, right? Because your team should be diverse and you have different ways and you need to know how to motivate them in different ways in order to drive that success. So yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And in different company sizes, I'd imagine even the personality and the type of kind of person that you might look for is going to vary. When we work with earlier stage startups, there's even at the COO role, which is really the stable voice in the room, our clients still want that person to somewhat run 100 miles per hour, just in a more stabilizing way. But in larger organizations, it's very much being the mature voice and being able to show that you can, you know, ride the roller coaster up and down while still maintaining your cool, and not be sort of frantic when things don't go a certain right way or wrong way.
You know, I'm just going to harp back on the communications piece because technical skills, kind of more quantitative, objective oriented folks can get down to the priorities and understand, you know, how to stack rank what a company needs to do, but being able to convey that to the rest of the company and build the right relationships internally to execute on that type of plan or set of priorities is extremely important, right? And I don't know how Fabio or Sarah feels about this, but I just feel that CEOs typically get looked at as kind of driving activities forward. But a lot of that driving is that constant communication and constant influence that is needed to make the company work because the wide cast of characters that you have to collaborate with.
Yeah, I mean, I'll totally agree with that. I think all those elements that we talked during this conversation so far, I think they help to answer this particular question. It's almost like one of the things that I like to think when I'm seeing companies hiring a COO or even when I look for it in the company that I'm a board member or advise is how not to hire a COO in the sense of a lot of times the COO role can be framed as the magical solution for all the operational problems. I'm just going to have this like, you know, magical hire that is going to show up and is going to be able to do all those things. It's a pretty, you know, like comprehensive responsibility. So knowing what you look for in terms of what are the two or three superpowers that you really need this person to have versus hoping that you're going to find a person that is going to be able to do it all, it's just not going to happen. It's just going to be set for failure for everyone. So also that context is really important.
That's amazing. Yeah. And I call that checklist hiring. And a lot of our clients do that. Like, oh, can this person do this? Oh, you know, it'd be really nice if they did this and this and this. Oh yeah, actually, can we find someone who does this, this, and this? And then once you get to the end of the hiring process of someone who checks all of those boxes, you're no longer looking for someone who really shines in the important areas. It's just how many boxes they check. And especially if you're a startup, you kind of don't want that person who checks all the boxes because they may not have the intention and energy to work on something a little bit earlier stage. I think that's a really great point. What are the two or three things someone should be absolutely like the top 5% in the world at, and then kind of go from there? And when you have sort of been looking at that hire, were there like one or two things that you've been like, this is where I want someone to be like top 5% in the world at? And I really want to gauge for that in the resumes and the interviews.
Yeah. I usually look for someone who has kind of like, you know, a good ability to think and build systems, to think about systems is almost like, you know, someone who can look into a particular reality, synthesize that reality, almost like decodify it, why this is happening, and then recodify it in a way that others can execute. And also, so it is a little bit of this ability of bringing order to chaos. So how this person thinks about systems, I think, is particularly important. And the other one is this adaptability and resourcefulness in terms of working always with limited amount of information, with, you know, like structures that are not fully formed, with people who have different priorities and how to align them together. I think that involves a lot of what I was mentioning in terms of conveying and communicating really well, but just like disalignment among people who are going to be really busy, other people in the company who are going to be really busy with other 800 things to do how to create that level of alignment, I try to look for that superpower as well.
That makes a lot of sense. When you have a million things you could be doing and a ton of different directions, what do you actually do? And it's not even what you do, it's how to, can you explain why you did it and what the learnings were and how you iterate? Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Any other thoughts on this one and what companies should look for when recruiting, interviewing, hiring a COO?
Resourcefulness is such a big one. And I think especially in earlier stage startups, being able to, the half-baked ideas or very little information or being able to turn that into that. And I think a lot of people, I think Han mentioned this earlier, but they know they don't want to do one function, end up in this role, right? So being able to, you're not an expert in things, but being resourceful is, I think, how a lot of people end up and what they like doing end up in this role.
Okay, awesome. And is being resourceful just being really good at Googling these days? Or is it going and just finding experts to go and get meetings with and maybe bring on as consultants or advisors? Like, when you don't really know something, but now you're in charge of it. Yeah. Is it just being really good at web searching or, taking a quick course or just finding the right experts and bringing them on board to help you kind of level up?
Yeah. For me, I mean, it's both. Obviously, everyone uses Google at some point. But it's definitely about the hustle, right? Like, if you don't know the answer, find someone who does, find someone who can share expertise. Most problems aren't brand new, right? Someone somewhere has faced them. So finding a way to get those answers is big.
Makes sense. Cool. Shimla mentioned. This one's really interesting because it does go into part of that question of, okay, do you start slow and ease your way in or, really go kind of rapidly and start affecting change very early in your tenures. And, I think in some of my previous roles, I've done both. And I don't think I ever figured out the exact right velocity to go at. So, would love to know, in some of the roles that all of you all have played, what were some of the things that you really wanted to get done in your first 30 to 60 and 90 days, that you sort of pitched into, the CEO or the board or whomever.
So I'm just going to jump in here. I think the 30, 60, 90 day approach is nice because it gives people kind of something to, some scaffolding to kind of use for their own kind of approaches. But it just depends on how big of a beast that company is, right? It's very different with the company I'm at now. You get the lay of the land pretty much in the first few days. But at Walmart, there's hundreds of thousands of people. And I go back to the type of work that needs to get done in that first fuzzy front end, right? And it's just break down the business. Like, where does my organization, my team fit in? What are the levers that we're pulling? And then just getting that context. I think Fabio may have mentioned this just a moment earlier. It's just being able to get as much context as you can. And then I think, maybe at the 60-day mark, depending on the scope of the organization, it's just, you've already should have charted out at least a few things you can push forward on. And I think 90 in this case would be a good a time as any to just do a gut check, review, the progress that you made and just course correct. And it's just iterative. I think it's kind of 30, 60, 90 every 90 days. And you're just constantly trying to get more and more context, more and more visibility, but you've got to be willing to go execute on a few things, come back, course correct, and do it all over again.
That's a really interesting point that it can just, you're facing a new challenge that you're fighting every month or two, maybe even more rapidly, considering you're doing a very agile role and you want your role to be more agile and just figure out what's wrong and keep on fixing it, which may appropriately turn off the right people to the role who don't want to have to run at that same speed all the time. So that's actually a really good point that you'll have to keep reinventing this.
So from my side, I'm always for moving quickly. In the beginning, the thing is more about moving quickly towards what, right? And then that's where the gathering the context really matters. And I think it can be really tricky, especially if you've been successful in your career in a similar job or as a COO, and then you get to the next place. And then there is this the temptation, I'm just going to do the thing that worked in the last place. And that's usually set for failure in my view, because the context is always going to be a little bit different. It's almost moving quickly, but you need to gather the context. And when I think about the 30, 60, and 90 days, it's almost okay, like, no, can I use roughly the 30 days to get the context and who are the people, what these people were like, what are the main processes of the company, what is the product like, what is the go-to-market like, almost like having the lay of the land. Then on the 60-day mark, having this initial hypothesis of what could be better, what would be the key levers that would transform the level of this company in terms of growth or scalability or turnaround, depends on the situation. And then between the 60 and the 90 day, can I develop some tests? Can I develop some tests to see if these hypotheses are true so I can push forward some of them? Or if not, what else I can learn from that those tests and pilots to do it? But the cycle of trying to get the context and then from that formulating hypothesis and from that testing if the hypothesis are right with these experiments, for me, is essential to actually know where you are and avoid this temptation of, okay, I just know everything that I should do. People should just listen to me. The reality is that, you know, every time that you see an opportunity in a company, like startup, a company that is a fast growing mode, it's like, you know, people who are there, they're smart. They're like, you know, they're doing good things. Like, you know, things, opportunities that are there, problems that are there, are not there because someone is stupid or like, you know, nobody cared. It's something else. So I think it's important to have this humility of learning the context first, but moving quickly in doing so and progressing forward.
Humility is great. it can be hard to combine. Thanks for that. And I think, you made a lot of really good points in there. The one that really resonated for me is you don't just do what worked at your last company over and over and over again. Even being, you know, external to the companies we work with as recruiters, you know, when we start a new recruiting job, sometimes the client just says, so here's our industry. Here's the five companies who are more successful than us in this industry. Just get us someone from them. It's like, well, no, like that's not the way to go. Number one, their challenges are very different. And just because you're picking off someone from a company who's a few years ahead of you doesn't mean you're going to become that company. And oftentimes they're just going to do some of the same stuff that they did over there in your organization, which is maybe what you think you want. But no, you want somebody who's actually going to be innovative and hungry and like want to learn and push for more. So that one really resonates for me because we have to push back on that quite regularly to not just say, all right, just get us someone from a company that does almost something similar to what we do. While there are learnings that person can bring into the organization, sometimes someone who hasn't done exactly that can motivate them to work harder and be driven. And so, it's a really interesting point. And I've actually consulted for different companies that sell almost the same product and tried doing that. I brought some marketing campaigns that worked from one company to the other and they completely flopped. And I was like, this doesn't even make sense. This is almost the exact same product. But yeah, just how it goes. Cool. Let's jump to the next one. This is probably one that is always a struggle, especially when you're in a startup that has limited resources and you want to take a few moonshots, but you got to deliver on your weeklies and your monthlies and your quarter over quarter goals. I've struggled with this one in the past as well from running marketing campaigns where just like, you know, send another email, put another ad out, get another like quick, you know, a few thousands of dollars in the door, but it's not doing anything to really change the trajectory of the company. Just help us hit quarterly goals. So I don't know if there's any thoughts on how to, number one, think about this and create a strategy, and number two, communicate it, because that's probably even the hardest part, getting buy-in for long-term investments when everyone is so short-term oriented. And there may not even be a perfect answer. It's just going to always suck and be a struggle. But there's any tidbits of learnings or even analogies that sort of, you know, you've encountered.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things that will definitely depend from company to company, from time, the market, everything. But I think what you just mentioned on communication is really, really key, right? Because I think it's also, even when you talk about short-term results, it's like, why do you need those results? I think I often think of that. It's like, are those milestones to get us to these long-term goals? Or are those just kind of arbitrary numbers we think that we need to hit? Right. So I think it's all about kind of communicating the communication around the short-term results and saying when, and knowing when it's time, when you can put them to the side and say like, okay, but we know that we need to be here. These numbers might not get us there, but we still think we're progressing here, and just kind of making sure that everyone's on the same page in that communication piece, I think for me, probably key.
That's a very bold question to go and ask. well, why do we need these dollars in the door this exact second? I'd imagine you get some pushback from that, or no, you've people have actually been responsive.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it before. in the sense, I mean, I think when they understand the long-term strategy and the vision, they can also see why those numbers might not make sense now, or why we're still making progress towards where we want to be in 6 months by not hitting them, right? So I think it's all about that context, that understanding, and kind of alignment in the team. And it is tricky. You're not wrong.
Any thoughts, Fabio or Ha, in terms of kind of aligning that? I know Ha, you worked in a lot of larger organizations that probably had to balance this pretty heavily while other companies are trying to disrupt you. So if you're a public company, you got to hit goals on a quarterly basis because you've got those earnings coming out, but then you also need to innovate in really complex markets.
I don't think there's a good answer for this. So it's just going to be blood.
Finally stumped everybody. Awesome.
If someone has a great answer, please volunteer it. You know, in larger companies, everybody, it just depends what group are you in, right? If you're in sales, there are certain things you're going to be doing, right? The activities are very different. If you're in engineering, you know, people are going to say, hey, we need to re-architect our entire platform. That's a long-term investment, but it's just so different. I've also advised and was a fractional exec for a fairly fast-growing large restaurant chain. And, you know, everybody was talking about long-term investment, menu development, long-term marketing until COVID hit. And then for the next 3 months, the short-term just completely won out. I mean, the decision-making had completely just changed depending on the context of different things like the market.
I would agree with that. There's no way to give the perfect answer if, like, you know, how much should be short-term oriented and how much should be long-term oriented. However, I think there are good answers in terms of how to think about it, right? And then how to think about it, in my view, in line with what Sarah and Ha mentioned, is that a lot of it is about the alignment and having these discussions more openly and avoid the illusion that you can do 100% of both. It's almost like, you know, and I think this is at the heart of the CEO function of making things that are implicit, making them explicit. Like, you know, if you're not setting a prioritization deliberately, one is going to be set for you. You know, like something is gonna have a bigger gravitational pull. So having the conversations in a more deliberate way of what are you choosing and why and what are the trade-offs, I think is absolutely essential. Even if that choice is wrong, as long as everybody's behind the choice, there is a definition of success, and then you can just go back and adjust it. That's fine, but the temptation that you're gonna be able to do it all is always really big. So having the kind of grown-up conversation in that regard makes a lot of difference.
Yeah, goes back to a lot of what Ha was harping on, communication and just aligning everyone. And maybe you don't really know whether you're making the right decision, focusing on either long-term or short-term. So everyone just needs to kind of buy in, hopefully, and work on it together. And if there's any indication that the direction you're going in isn't working, hopefully also get that re-buy-in to go the right direction. And hopefully, you know, there's a better strategy than when I went through. I worked at a company that was acquired by a much larger company. And basically their management strategy on this was grow 20% quarter over quarter, everyone gets fired. That was pretty much just very cut and dry. And certain portions of that larger organization, business units, so if they didn't grow 20%, the larger company would just basically fire 50% plus of the business unit, which I think there can be probably better strategies than that to get to align short term and, you know, get some long term growth in there. Who jump in the action? Obviously, all of you have been in that CEO role roughly for the last 5-ish years. But I don't know if there's any misgivings or sort of like legacy within the role that has really evolved now, or it's kind of the same. It's just technology maybe evolves, but the role is sort of still the stabilizing force in the organization, keeping everything going, et cetera.
In my view, I think it's almost like, you know, the level of change or the level of entropy that you have in a particular company, in a particular system, make the role of a COO even more important. it's almost there is this relationship in which the quicker things are changing, the more you need someone to try to make sense of that change and try to set the operational system and operational cadence to accommodate that. It's almost like one of those things that the quicker you're growing or the more the market is being disrupted, more confusion is going to happen. More, like, you know, it's going to be more likely that things that were working before, they stop working. And then you need someone to try to make sense of that. And again, it's not only about executing, but the things that have been talking during this hour of aligning and having the right set of priorities, having a unified metric of success and then whoever went together. So that job to be done becomes more important. And usually it's the COO, the key person who can do that job or who can facilitate that job.
That's a good point. I mean, it's really only been in the last 10 to 15 years. There's a reset obviously happening now that companies were expected to be worth $1 billion within 5 years, or they weren't necessarily considered a success, which is ridiculous, number one. And number two, you know, how do you actually get there? There's no blueprint because so few companies have actually done it. And, you know, a lot of it is based on luck, time, place. I'd imagine that makes the role more complex than it was before, where companies have longer lead time and longer an ability to get there over, like, let's say a decade or more. So I don't know. All of you have been in startups that have kind of probably had pretty high expectations for growth. So I'd imagine that's probably affected the job quite a bit. I really appreciate all the learnings here. I think I got a lot of tidbits. Number one, on how, what to look for a great COO, what exactly the role, you know, should really focus on. And, you know, I think a lot of things I took away. Great communication really is kind of the baseline, and that all of you are amazing at keeping a CEO in line and, you know, providing the nuts and bolts when necessary. And thanks to all of the attendees. We have recorded this event, and we'll send it out to everyone once we've sort of got it all together. Thanks a lot to all the panelists, Sarah, Fabio, and Ha.
Yeah, thanks guys for hosting this as well. Really appreciate it.
It's great chatting.
Yeah,
thank you. It was great.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.